Across the vast expanse of our galaxy, there could be none so foolish as to think that they have forged a truly peaceful existence within the stars. Demonic incursions, rebellious insurrectionists, and even the simple trial of having to face off against the raw elements have all proven to be the downfall of thousands of worlds who were unprepared to endure the terrible challenges of our time. Oftentimes, however, one may find it preferable to fall in the defense of their homes against these foes, as opposed to becoming a victim to the sadistic dregs of the once mighty Eldari Empire. I am, of course, referring to the most malign faction who are currently at large within the galaxy, and these would be none other than the Drukhari. They are the degenerate product of the sickening pleasure cultists, who long ago brought about the downfall of the Eldari by living a life of pure decadence and overindulgence. At the jaded apex of their depraved society, the sheer emotional forces produced from their heinous acts culminated in the birth of the chaos god Slaanesh, who voraciously feasted upon the delectable souls of millions of Eldari, ultimately spelling the end of their venerable empire. Whilst many of the more chaste of Eldari fled to the craft worlds or to the maiden worlds, a large majority of those within the pleasure cults chose to seek refuge within the darkest depths of the Webway, where they claimed the port city of Komorah to act as their new home. Over the next 10,000 years, these black-hearted curs proceeded to rebuild and transform the once prosperous hub of trade into a true den of inequity, rivaled in its scale by no other place within the galaxy. The societal order within Komorah is barely held together by the intrusive grip of the Supreme Overlord Asdrubal Vect, and even with the large population of vile aristocrats, many of them would much prefer to live a life of bucolic and indulgent ease rather than to uphold some level of peace within the streets. As such, it will most often fall to the paramilitary forces of the great cabals to prevent the dark city from falling into a state of pure anarchy. Some may consider them as nothing but glorified gangs, whereas others would tremble in fear at the prospect of encountering a high-ranking warrior. But for now, they will take the focus of today's sermon. With the state of Komorah and of the wider galaxy in mind, let us now explore the various cabals of the Drukhari. We shall first learn of the ancient history of the Dark City, with a focus on how the Kabbalite system was brought into the forefront of their fallen society. Then, we shall learn of what makes up a cabal and of why one may choose to join in with their depraved ranks. Finally, we will cover their organizational and hierarchical order, with a focus on the truly cruel masters who rule over their city with a vice grip. The first point to learn is that in the ancient days of the Drukhari, when they first claimed Komorah as their own, their society was almost entirely based around the ideals of the old Eldari society, only taken to a more perverse and extreme level. The old nobles and aristocratic rulers found purchase within the Dark City as kings and princes, where they sought to extend their dynastic houses perpetually through the long night. This was not entirely unopposed by the rest of the Drukhari populace, but it was only the nobles who had the arms and followers to wrangle control over the rather chaotic and anarchic city. Deep within the region known as Khor Spur, the various noble houses had erected their great palaces, chateaus, and fortresses, which were each teeming with slaves, mercenaries, and fools who thought that their loyalty to a corrupted aristocrat would garner them some form of grace. It was not uncommon for sporadic bursts of conflict to occur between the nobles, who each saw their own lineage as being the most significant and most royal to have survived the Great Fall. These squabbling spats soon came to an end when the nobles found themselves as the combined targets of the Drukhari organization known as the Solar Cult. They were the architects who had leaned into their decadent ways during the time of the Eldari. By stealing the great black suns, which now act as the baleful light source for all of Komorah. The cultists had become an incredibly powerful and influential faction within the Dark City, and after years of suffering through the arrogant directions of the aristocrats, they finally took a stand and declared war on the noble houses. Initially, they used their arcane tools to dim the Stygian light of the suns until all of Komorah was plunged into an eternal gloom. The city streets were soon to be lit up with the sporadic bursts of arms fire as the mercenary armies of the nobles were dispatched to not only defeat the cultists, but also to expand their valuable estates. A considerable portion of this war was waged within the skies, as skimmers and light craft of each side dove and careened through the darkness, taking terrifying maneuvers to gain the upper hand over the other. This period of darkness lasted for several centuries. However, it was the depraved nobles who eventually claimed victory over the solar cultists. Though they were successful in their operation, this conflict had caused a rather large shift in Komorah's collective perception of the nobles. For eons, none would have questioned the rule of the fallen patricians, and yet all had now seen them suffer and struggle for control over the Dark City. Many of their estates were ruined. Some had simply been conquered and absorbed by other greedy nobles, and their mercenary forces had been devastated by the protracted conflict. It was from the sight of their failings which ignited the first sparks of rebellion within one meek slave who would go on to forever change the landscape of Komorah. And this figure was none other than Asdrubal Vect. Sold as a warrior slave, Vect had formed a small military force known as the Cult of the Black Heart, which had been truly instrumental in aiding the noble houses in defeating the solar cultists. In the wake of their victory, however, he saw that his forces were rather intact, whereas his masters would still require several years of effort to recuperate themselves from their heavy losses. With this delightful opportunity now presenting itself, he dispersed his followers to rejoin with the rest of Drukhari society, where they were to spread out across the Dark City and wait for the call to action. His agents were carefully instructed to carry out Vect's orders, where they initiated missions of assassination, sabotage, and targeted disruption to the foolish nobles who did not suspect that a half-born slave could ever aspire towards anything past their own survival. This, however, was a most deadly mistake to make. After years of planning, Vect finally struck, where in one fell swoop, his followers eliminated the strongest of noble houses and criminal organizations who could have opposed his new regime. Eventually, it was only he who stood as the true leader of the Dark City. His pernicious scheme had removed any rival powers from his home, and thus he was named as the supreme overlord of all Komorah, a title which he has held to this very day. In addition, his organization of the cult had shaped them into a truly effective armed force, and so he legitimized them by renaming them as the Cabal of the Black Heart. This Cabalite structure was then quickly adopted by the lesser survivors of the conflict, who wished to hold an army as magnanimous as their new liege. These feeble nobles who reformed their dynastic houses into cabals still detest Vect for his terrible rebellion, but it is unlikely that they will ever rise to their old levels of prominence to challenge him once more. It did not take long until the old aristocratic order was completely eclipsed by the new cabals. It had removed any notion of inherited power, and the idea that one should hold some form of influence purely because of their gentle birth was now seen as being truly laughable. Instead, leadership and authority would be claimed by force, where only the strongest and most strategic of individuals would be able to navigate the internecine systems of the Dark City to eventually wrangle some semblance of sovereignty over their kin. Now that we know of how they came into being, let us delve into the details of what a cabal actually is. So, as some of you may have guessed, each one of the cabals exists as an independent and quasi-sovereign organization within the Dark City. Whilst all must bow their heads and respect the power held by the Supreme Overlord, the Archons are generally free to operate and act on their own accord. As such, the raiding targets, damnable deeds, and overall propensity for sin of their members will be quite distinct between each cabal. Some may be organized in such a way that they resemble a roaming pirate band more than anything else. These groups would boast a large fleet of void crafts, skimmers, and flyers, all of which will be used for atrocious raids against the lesser species of the galaxy. Others, however, particularly those who found their origins through their noble lineage, will resemble the aristocratic houses of old, with their rulers ordering about their subservient Kabbalite warriors from the opulent safety of their palaces. Regardless of their internal structure, you must understand that it is from the cabals that Komorah and the Drukhari earn their strength. The armed forces of these fallen Eldari will be sourced from the Kabbalite warrior covens and groups, who will be eager to delve into real space to plunder the treasured souls of any fools who may dare to oppose them. Whilst some of the smaller cabals may be rather meek, consisting of only a few hundred warriors dotted about a few scant hideouts, the largest have been known to employ several million veteran Drukhari, and their territories will have ballooned to cover huge regions of the Dark City. It is no wonder then that these large cabals are incredibly influential within Komorah. With great power comes the ability to inflict your twisted and malign will upon the galaxy. And so whoever can command over the most warriors or controls the most territory will be poised to seize the title of Supreme Overlord if they are feeling ambitious enough. This is often a fool's errand, however. Vect, ruling at the head of the Cabal of the Black Heart, is all too aware of the schemes and plots against him, and so any who would dare to step to his dark throne will soon find their throats to be slit by a shrouded mandrake. In any case, the Kabbalite system has permeated every aspect of Drukhari society to the point where it would be truly impossible to avoid if one were to live within the Dark City. Every Drukhari, whether they be true or half-born, will likely seek to join in with a cabal. Some may have some attachment to their favored areas of Komorah, and so they will join in with a local group, whereas others may seek nothing but power and glory, in which case they would petition the members of an infamous cabal to allow them to join in their ranks. Once within a cabal, your life will drastically change. You now owe your allegiances and life to your ruling Archon, who will direct you throughout the various raids and campaigns which you are sure to soon take part in. Even though war is an inevitability, there is still some semblance of safety to be found within the Kabbalite ranks. The streets of Komorah are far from safe, with many a prowling beast or foul homunculus being eager to snatch up a lost soul for their malign experimentations. These dangers, however, are far less likely to befall a Kabbalite warrior. Not only is their association with a great cabal enough to dissuade most foolish attackers, but their newfound training and equipment should prove to be more than enough to fend off those who would attempt to steal away their soul. To attack even a newly recruited member of a cabal is tantamount to a declaration of war within the Dark City. They take their organizations incredibly seriously, and none will accept any form of slight against their prestigious name. As a result of this, it is not uncommon for the Kabbalite warriors to be rather arrogant and foolhardy within the city. They can freely attack non-affiliated individuals or mercenaries, and they know that any significant response against them will be met by the backing of their entire cabal, essentially giving them a free pass to plunder the independent entities who call the Dark City as their home. Do not mistake this as them having permission to raid members of other cabals, however. No Kabbalite member will be allowed to attack those of another organization unless they are absolutely sure that there will be no fallout and no vengeful attack for their actions. The Archons, whilst open to the thought of war, would rather conserve their forces, especially if the reason for an all-out conflict was simply due to an arrogant recruit assaulting a rival Kabbalite warrior. Because of this, if there are disagreements between the cabals, then they will typically be resolved through methods which are rather more subtle. Assassinations, abductions, and kidnappings will plague the lower streets of Komorar, and this is to simply be accepted as being part and parcel of living within the Dark City. So long as their operation does not lead back to the cabal in any way, then the Archons will generally accept these small squabbles, but they must ever be aware of the possibility of a large-scale war occurring between the groups. In addition to there being safety in numbers, the strict ranking system of the cabals provides a rather clear-cut progression for the new members. As I mentioned previously, many of the citizens of Komorar will attempt to join with a cabal, and should they prove themselves as hardy enough to survive the initiation rituals, then they will be named as Kabbalite warriors. Though becoming a soldier within a cabal is somewhat dangerous, the alternative would be to live a pitiful life of slavery, and knowing of how these indentured servants are treated, most would rather risk themselves within a raiding party. The majority of warriors will stay somewhat confined within the Dark City. They can be found acting as the guards or muscle to the local lords and archons, who will generally see them as disposable fodder to be used in executing plots for the cabal. It is only those who have proven themselves as being reliably competent and skilled in their arts who will be selected to join the warbands destined for a real space raid. The Drukhari would rather not waste their opportunities to plunder the fattened worlds of the galaxy, and so these uncommon warriors will be summoned to form a small squad, where they will eventually form the backbone of the raiding force. Ascending from a vicious warrior into a diabolical sybarite will occur after that individual has proven themselves to be a truly ruthless and malicious servant to the cabal. Upon attaining this rank, they will be granted leadership over a small band of warriors, but you must remember that the petty soldiers will each be waiting for the perfect opportunity to strike and steal that position away for themselves. I should note, however, that overstepping one's boundaries, regardless of your position, will be met with a swift, retributive action. None will be too pleased to learn that some foolish upstart is attempting to muscle into your prized role, and so these actions will typically lead to nothing but a painful death. Another important aspect of the Kabbalite ranking system is that there is a great deal of inequality and prejudice to be found between those who are true-born and with those who are half-born. A true-born Drukhari is one who came into being from a natural birth, which for their species takes an inordinate amount of time, which supposedly gives some sense of value to these individuals. Those who are half-born, however, were rapidly grown in the amniotic gestation vats of the homunculus covens, and unfortunately, they are looked down upon by their true-born cousins. Because of this, as you climb higher in the ranks of a cabal, it becomes far less likely for a half-born Drukhari to attain a position of seniority. The arrogant true-borns consider any other than themselves as being inferior, with many even finding some shame in the fact that their supreme overlord, Asdrubal Vect, is himself a half-born. In any case, once a Sybarite has attained some level of renown, they may ascend into the position of Drakon. These would be the commanders of the Drukhari forces, and they will typically lead smaller engagements or raids, with hundreds of Kabbalate warriors being kept at their disposal. They have access to some of the finest pieces of war gear available within the Dark City. However, a Drakon must be careful to not outdo those who hold a more senior post. While it will be incredibly common for these commanders to adorn their armor with talismans, effigies, and trophies, they still need to keep these somewhat minimalistic when compared with the true rulers of the Cabal. If an Archon suspects that his subordinate Draken is attempting to outshine or outdo his own wardrobe, then this insult cannot go unpunished, and the gaudy fool will likely be stolen away and sold as a tool of experimentation to the homunculus covens. Nevertheless, these Drakens, if they are careful, can still live a rather opulent life. They may hold a small retinue of veteran warriors, often being sourced from the ranks of the Trueborns, who will be uplifted out of the common rabble of a raiding force. Typically, these bodyguards will be treated exceptionally well by their Draken, who will shower them with gifts, praise, and generally enviable conditions when compared to the other warriors of a Cabal. This is obviously done as a ploy to gain their undying loyalty, for as one grows in power and in esteem within the Dark City, then holding a cadre of trusted bodyguards is truly worth its weight in souls. As a figure who stands somewhat adjacent to the typical Kabbalite structure, we will find the Hierarchs. These are the quasi-leaders of the Incubi, where they rule over individual obsidian shrines, directing the warriors to join with whichever Cabal is willing to pay for their services. I shall go into more depth on the Incubi soon, but for the Hierarchs, they will hold decades of experience in the art of swordsmanship, and occasionally they may be hand-picked by an Archon to fulfill something of an advisory role within their personal council. Here, they will provide some insight as to the comings and goings of their Cabal, primarily focusing on matters which may directly endanger the ruling lord. It is not uncommon for the Hierarchs to also be called into battle should their skills be needed, and they will reap a bloody toll upon their enemies should they ever step foot within a blade's reach of any who may dare oppose them. The final ranking which may be achieved within a Cabal would be none other than the title of Archon. This is the supreme leader of the entire Drukhari Cabal, and it is from their will which brings damnation to the mortal souls of the galaxy. There are none who have proven themselves to be as cunning, as ruthless, or as resourceful as these fallen lords, and though many may try, it is no small feat to overthrow a vicious Archon. Nevertheless, they are under the constant threat of insurrections, coups, and bloody rebellions from those who may aspire towards claiming their lofty position. But you must understand that if these mutinous upstarts were capable enough, then they would have already achieved these goals years ago. Instead, the figure who stands as the Archon of their Cabal will truly live at the apex of extravagance within Komorach, rivaled only by the lifestyle enjoyed by Asdrubal Vect himself. They reside within the finest of palaces, with untold thousands of personal guards and slaves being at their disposal to carry out whatever whim they desire. If an Archon wished to see two creatures from either end of the galaxy duke it out within the witch cult arenas, then he would merely need to snap his fingers to bring this into existence. Conversely, if his trusted trueborn companion died in battle, then he could summon a homunculus to resurrect and revivify the fallen corpse, taking only a small portion of their eternal soul as well as a few hundred slaves to act as payment for the terrible ritual. Aside from the spectacles and feats which they can bring into being, only the finest of war gear will be used by an Archon. Ancient tools and artifacts from the old Eldari Empire will have been recovered, reformed, and rebuilt into weapons of war, whilst their armor will be a relic of itself, which the Archon will adorn with the finest of trinkets and trophies as a gaudy display of wealth. The armor may appear deceptively light, but it will be typically formed of ghost plate, a Drukhari material which contains pockets of an exotic gas which can disperse and absorb a tremendous amount of force before it can impact the wearer. In addition to their equipment, all Archons will form a small retinue of their most trusted bodyguards and advisors who will accompany them at near all times during expeditions into real space or when planning operations within Komorar. It will not only be Drukhari who follow in the Archon's wake, as sometimes they may request that an alien mercenary, such as a Slith or a shackled beast creature named as an Ur-Ghul, may accompany them into battle. Regardless of their companions, the level of influence that they hold over Komorar is truly stunning, and much of this is thanks to their diabolical scheming and plotting against their kin. There are even rumors that the Archons known as the Lords of Twilight managed to secure their place of power by following through with a plan which was first formulated during the height of the Eldari Empire. It would be near impossible to ascertain the truth of this claim, since those ancient Drukhari nobles are far too arrogant, and they wouldn't dream of sharing their fabled stories with any other than themselves. Another key aspect of the Kabbalite system is that aside from their loyal and sadistic followers, they are also known to hire vast corps of mercenary warriors to fight by their side. These hired guns are ever to be found within the depths of Komorar, but are primarily located within their own district, which is known as Sek Maegra, or the Null City. Freelance warriors of every species will be found here, tending to their armaments, where they await for a Kabbalite representative to saunter in and offer up a vast bounty of treasures for them to fight by their side in a coming raid. The mercenaries must be cautious of their hosts, however, for one can never be too sure if the smiling Archon before them will actually follow through with his supposed payment. There are also many non-aligned Drukhari factions within the Dark City who may be swept up in a Kabbalite force for the right price. As I have mentioned, the incubi can be bargained with to join as bodyguards or to act as simple shock troops for a large engagement. Their vast obsidian shrines are true displays of wealth within the already affluent city, and this is all thanks to their long history of working closely with the paranoid Archons and nobles who will handsomely pay for the services of a veteran bladesmaster. There are none who are more skilled in their art of graceful death than of the incubi, and their art form is highly prized within the Dark City. Truly the most infamous of their ranks would be the executioner Drazar, who, amongst his thousands of victims, was successful in felling even the great Asuriani Phoenix Lord of the Howling Banshees, Jain Zar, in single combat. As a rather strange point, these mercenary warriors are so disciplined and so loyal to their patron that some would consider them as being perhaps the only Drukhari who can truly be trusted within the entirety of the Dark City. In some ways, the incubi can be compared to the aspect warrior groups of the Asuriani within the craft worlds, although their neutral stance would make them rather distinct from those spacefaring fools. Supposedly, the initiation ritual required to become an incubi is as follows. A Kabbalite warrior must kill an Aspect warrior in single combat before bringing their spirit stone to the hierarch of their chosen shrine. This figure will then crush the treasured artifact before reforming it into a malign torture device, which will be mounted upon the chest of the new incubi, where it will forever emit waves of horrifying psychic energy, shattering the morale of any who find themselves opposed to these fallen blades masters. If an Archon required some form of aerial support for a coming battle, then they could petition the various jet biker gangs or of the freelance pilots to join them in their cause. These nimble daredevils are never known to turn down an opportunity to get out and raid an unprepared world within real space, and all they would ask for is but a meager share of the plunderous earnings to take back home. Similarly, for some of the larger incursions, then those who pilot the vast void crafts and ships of the Drukhari fleets may be paid off for their services. These graceful vessels will glide through the ethereal strands of the ancient webway, carrying within their bowels the thousands of eager Kabbalite warriors who all wish to inflict pain and misery upon the poor denizens of the galaxy. High up in the cloud-piercing spires of the starscrapers, one may be able to strike a deal with the flocks of scourges who roost up in their tall perches, but do be warned, for they are just as likely to pluck you from the streets and impale you on a towering spike as they are to agree to your foolish endeavor. These twisted figures are the result of the most hedonistic and affluent of Drukhari, who sought out a homunculus to hollow out their bones and to graft great wings upon their backs. Their new half-avian life is rather comfortable to them, and in this form, they have found a rather essential role to play within the Dark City. The Scourges are known to act as the messengers to the high Archons and nobles, who will indulge the curious, malformed Drukhari with a great source of riches to carry out these tasks by hand. Supposedly, the messages given to the Scourges all contain a unique poison, where the only available antidote is to be sourced from the biology of the recipient, ensuring that the creature does actually fulfill their task, lest they painfully die from their failure. Among the most nightmarish of creatures within Komorak, who can be temporarily called into a Kabbalite war, perhaps the most unnerving and downright horrifying, would be the Mandrakes. All fear the denizens of Ailindrak, for who could ever feel safe knowing of a tainted beast which can pull its way into reality through but the darkness of your own shadow? To call upon their services will almost always require a healthy procurement of slaves who will surely never be seen again. Sometimes, however, they may request a rather more exotic and sinister payment. Some of the more loquacious of Archons have revealed a select few of these strange requests, with one of them being that a mandrake asked to feel but a single heartbeat of a familial lord before they agreed to manifest upon a battlefield. Another, who was rather disturbed by this offer, claimed that when he sought out their aid, that the mandrakes claimed that they would eternally pledge themselves to the Cabal, if only they could taste the Archon's future dying breath. An important point to add is that over the long millennia, many of the Cabals have found their own niche within Komorak, and as such have specialized themselves into becoming masters of certain forms of combat. For example, the Cabal of the Flayed Skull is well known for their extensive use of Reaver jet bikes, Razor Wing jet fighters, and Void Raven bombers, all of which are owned by some of the finest of pilots found within the Dark City. Conversely, the Cabal of the Obsidian Rose has long controlled the arms markets within Komorak, meaning that its Kabbalite members have the first choice of any exotic or prized weaponry which passes through the Great Port. Regardless of their tactics, the Cabals are all highly revered within the Dark City, and none would dare to launch an outright attack on one unless they truly knew that they could attain a decisive victory from but the opening salvo. Due to the size of these organizations, Some would see them as being quasi-permanent, or immortal groups to Komarach. And thanks to the constant flow of new recruits and aspirant warriors, this may indeed be the case. All should fear the possibility of a Kabbalite raiding band choosing to descend and plunder your world. For after they have looted and stolen away your every valuable, then they will turn to you and see nothing but a prize to hand over to a foul homunculus. And terror only knows of what they may have in store for you.